Some of you have heard today that we don't need heroes, because if you have a movement, then you can make sure that the movement is responsible. I think of Eugene Debs, who said, I would not lead you into the promised land if I could, because if I could lead you in, any damn fool could lead you out. Now, I think there's some truth to that, but I have a hero, and I'm just about to introduce him here. If Phil would come forward. Phil Donahue. All right. You're losing your hero status here. There he is, he's right behind me. Please welcome our hero, Phil.
I am sorry. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Well, thank you very much. I was busy congratulating Professor Cole, and I missed my cue. I'd rather be Phil Donahue late than the late Phil Donahue. I was hoping that I would be recognized, and sure enough, out in the parking lot, somebody said, "Hey, Merv." But it is a big deal to follow these fabulous voices of conscience. This is a lineup here. You may not know this, but Jim Hightower can get CNN on his hat. And if he turns, he gets Fox, so he tries not to. And I see we have a drone here. I mean, we are sending unmanned aerial vehicles 4,000 miles to another country far away, and a man sits in a cage with a joystick and looks at a TV monitor, camera in the nose of this thing, and says, "There they are." And we fire it, and we are killing children. And this is on Obama's watch. Maybe this is why we have flames blazing all over the world. Australia's in this now. Australia is threatening the American embassy in Sydney. And people ask, well, why don't they like us? And by the way, you can't ask that question, because if you do, you're blaming the victim. This is just one of the ways it's so difficult to protest a war. Norman Solomon, who will follow me in a moment, took me to school. He makes the point in a book titled, and his movie titled, War Made Easy, that if a president wants a war, he can have one. We have millions and millions of proud Americans, church-going proud Americans who always vote, who believe that to criticize a president who's ramping up for a war is unpatriotic, undermines our president, is disrespectful to the troops. Well, I was going to say that, but some of the nuns who taught me may be in the audience. You can't blame the victim. You can't criticize a war. Dissenting is very, very difficult. It's much too difficult. But we have now reached a point, and by the way, because we found it so difficult to dissent, we allowed George Bush, with the politics of fear, 3 weeks before an election, to take this whole nation by the ear and lead it right into the sword. Over 4,000 Americans dead. We haven't counted yet the number of Iraqis who died, at least 4 million refugees, because Bush said, bring it on. The root of our foreign policy has been a rootin' tootin' shoot, don't mess with Texas foreign policy. And we have to stop it. And I believe we can. And by the way, By the way, if we're not going to use our right to dissent, then stop sending all these young men and women to fight and die in the sand in places far away if we're not going to use it. Stop wasting their blood. We get a Neo-Mussolini and he'll tell us what's good for us and he'll make decisions behind closed doors. You can have any kind of country you want. The politics of fear works. That's our problem. And so I kind of made it my, by the way, a member of, a colleague of mine on my own show during my short unhappy life at MSNBC said, that's the trouble with you liberals, you don't like anything about America. So if you criticize America, it means you don't like anything about America. This is another way they shush us. We are told to shut up and sing. But let's understand this. We're popular now. Our view is held by most Americans. We have to know that there's nothing radical or minority about us. And by the way, if you put the Bill of Rights to this House, it would pass. We've had a, you know, free speech has become like a quaint idea. We have appear to have evolved into a nation, or should I say devolved, into a nation that operates under the rule of law unless we're scared. If we're scared, the president has to protect us. The president has to listen in our phone calls. He has to put in people in cages halfway around the world, no Red Cross, no phone calls, no nothing. We can pull fingernails out, turn guys upside down, pour water down their nose, because the president has to protect us. It's a lesson on how easy it is to lose the fabulous insight of the framers. We're the patriots. We believe in the Bill of Rights. We believe a person's home is his castle. We don't believe you should be sneaking in there without judicial authorization. How easy it is for us to turn our back on the thing we brag about all the time. Democracy, democracy. Juan Cole made the point. Hell, less than half of us vote. We've chipped away at the bedrock of this nation. I'm afraid our president has a tin ear regarding the Bill of Rights, civil liberties, because he too has to protect us and then bring along media. Tell me about media. Before Rupert Murdoch hits the floor in the morning on the occasion of his awakening, he's thinking how today he will bust a union. He has been the most successful union buster, purveyor of propaganda in the history of media. This is a chapter in, I think, American politics, and we should say world politics. And that's why we want to pay more attention to John Nichols and Robert McChesney. These people, are doing more to remind us of the influence of media. And now, what do we have? We have the shirts and the skins. Political commentary has become a contact sport. CNN has some rating problems now, real ratings problems. And I believe it's because they don't have enough people on CNN shouting at each other. You watch the evening news as I do, the evening cable news as I do, I mean, you'll see some of the most horrible rhetoric possible. People are saying hateful things about each other. People on one side are suggesting they know about the condition of the soul of another person on the other side. You will never hear anything remotely positive about, for example, President Obama on Fox. Never. And isn't it interesting I was fired from MSNBC for opposing the war because I was a liberal. I was counted, by the way, as I had to have two conservatives on for every liberal. That was a mandate. I was considered two liberals. So, I mean, talk about power. And weren't the framers, consider the insight that the framers had. Don't ever unite politics and religion. What a fabulous idea. And this is almost 300 years ago. I don't mind a president who talks to God every day. I've been known to do that myself. I don't want a president who talks to God every day and God talks back. That's the reason. And as we look at the fires across the world, you can see it tonight on CNN. We see what theocracy can do, what dogma can do. You know, when I was a kid, I was a Catholic, and I was the best kind of Catholic. I was an Irish Catholic. Boy, you know. I had a pope who couldn't make a mistake. I had a day where they marched. I marched in the St. Patrick's Day parade. I felt sorry for people who weren't Irish Catholic. We had the best music. Tooraloo-ra-loo-ra. I mean, I thought, wow, am I lucky. I didn't care for Presbyterians, you know what I'm saying? And Episcopalians. This is the beginning of it. This is the beginning of it. I've got God and you don't. And if I have God and you don't, I can do all kinds of things to you. The church, the Christian church, has done more to promote homophobia than any other single institution in the history of the world. And I'm now, it took a long time, it was hard to stand up and to say something like that. You know, my mother was watching me from her apartment in Rocky River, Ohio. And I was featuring people on my program who were saying things like this. And the scales were falling off my eyes. I was beginning to see it, to understand it, to understand that if the church thinks homosexuals are sinners, then I can beat them up. Some insecure young man in a bar can drink a lot of beer and go beat up queers outside the gay bar. Homophobia is lethal, and it's being promoted by the people who claim to be closest to God. This has to stop. So, where does that leave us now? We have millions of Americans who've already crossed the line of cynicism. What does it matter what I do? You know, hey, wars happen. A kind of surrender to the inevitability of war. And if that continues, we're going to lose this wonderful, fabulous idea called the United States of America, a wonderful experiment in Republican democratic democracy. Fabulous. And we're all grateful for having been born, me by accident of birth, into this fabulous idea. But it's not going to stay, it's not going to keep if we don't do something about it. So, in response to those people who have said to me, that's the trouble with you liberals, you don't love anything about America, I want to offer you just a couple of reasons why I do. And I'll just be brief about this. One is Lawrence v. Texas. That's the Supreme Court decision that shot down anti-sodomy laws. We had cops in a small town in Texas who would wait outside for nightfall, and they knew they had two gay guys living in that house over there, and they wanted to get them some queers. And they were constitutionally permitted to do so. And they knocked that door down with a flash. So what's going on in here? The gay and lesbian lawyers who argued this case got shot down at every level, and they finally got to the Supremes. And they sat there hardly able to breathe. And out come the nine robes. And the justices took their places. And it was Anthony Kennedy, a Catholic, by the way, who read the decision for the majority. And when he came to this sentence, there are some places in a person's life the state may not enter. And when he said that, the gay and lesbian lawyers who had fought and fought and fought bowed their heads and softly wept. This is how noble we can be. This is just one reason why. Imagine this decision in the Islamic world. That's how secure we are. That's how aware we are of how we have offended so many people. We have a law. Nobody's going up to a gay person today and say, I bet you're glad that's over, because it isn't. It's a dragon that continues to work its death and destruction in our society. But we are doing more, I think, than any other nation on earth to fight it and to stop it. Another one that always fascinated me was the Jehovah's Witness case. Jehovah's Witness kids did not salute the flag. This is 1940. People are at war, they're dying, Pacific, in the European theater, and the children stood up at Pledge Allegiance to the flag. Jehovah's Witness kids, you're in the third grade. There is no word to describe the loathing we felt for those kids. We threw stones at them. I remember walking past a Kingdom Hall in my own neighborhood. Remember, I'm the Catholic, I'm in the one true church, and I thought, boy, I bet, you know, what about those weirdos? I might have thrown a stone at these people. Somebody put rope around the necks of Jehovah's Witness. By the way, they wouldn't serve in the army. You can't. And they drove people crazy, you know. Jews go to temple, Catholics go to mass, Jehovah's Witnesses go door to door and drive everybody crazy. And the Supremes in 1940 said, you have to salute. And the school that expelled you has a constitutional right to make you salute. William O. Douglas, salute, you little bastard, or whatever they said. I wasn't there. Felix Frankfurter, salute. I salute. Imagine, some of the most liberal members of our court. Exactly 3 years to the month later, June 1943, the Supremes take it back. And William Gobitis, this is the case in West Virginia, is standing there. He held onto the pockets of his breeches to keep the teacher from pulling his arm up to salute. And this little kid, you don't know powerless until you saw this little kid. And this is what the Constitution is about: protect the powerless. And we had a nation. We had a hostile population coming down on this little kid who stood there with his hands on his pockets and comes down. Second decision, 1943. Comes down from the mountain, Robert Jackson, and delivered one of the greatest lines in the history of Supreme Court writing, in my opinion. If there is any fixed star in our constitutional constellation, it is that no official, high or petty, can prescribe what shall be orthodox in religion, nationalism, politics, or any other matter of opinion. You cannot force an American to believe anything. You can't force an American to believe in the Constitution, which gives you the right how mature we are, how secure we are to say that. You want to worship a pet rock, that's your business. And by the way, we don't trip over our robes, God bless and this, that, my dog and my cat. I think that's false piety, and I think it's for short-term political gain. And I don't think we should necessarily applaud it, ever. Our faith, if we have one, comes from in here. One more story. Not long ago, my wife Marlo Thomas wrote a book titled, I'll tell her you welcomed her. I'm sorry she's not here, she's in Memphis, which is the location of the hospital that her father, Danny Thomas, founded, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Marlo is one of the chief fundraisers. She calls fundraising the world's second oldest profession. And she says it's just as tiring. Now, the book was titled The Right Words at the Right Time. And it included essays. You could write your own essay or someone would write it for you and then you got final cut. Nobody published anything that you didn't agree with. One was written by an Iraq veteran, a soldier, an active duty soldier, who was standing in line at McDonald's. And he was really in a depression. He had just come back from active duty and he was probably going to be reassigned. And he's thinking, nobody knows what I'm going through. Nobody knows the danger of the men and women that I fought with. Nobody knows the pain of seeing guys die in front of you. And he felt awful. He really was depressed. He understood suicide and why there were so many. And he finally got up to the counter. The older I get, the easier I cry. He ordered his Big Mac and his fries. Little girl, looked like she was 12. Got the fry. He had the $10 bill in his hand. And she gave him the bag. And she reached out and shook his hand and said, "Thank you for your service." And he felt his $10 bill come back into his own palm. This is how noble we can be. This little girl gave him his money back. Thank you for your service. We are noble people, and we are in danger of losing this feeling about ourselves. And if we do, we're finished, really. And I've seen so many people run out and wave their arms for a weekend and then just sputter out. They are the feather and the problem is the Rock of Gibraltar. And they quit. They take guitar lessons, maybe yoga, or they live under a car top in northern New Mexico. I mean, a lot of people I saw in the Vietnam, that all the tie-dye t-shirts and all the kids who were out there, kids getting beat up by the cops, brave, brave kids, just have their energy just drain out of them. That's what we can't let happen. We have to keep on keeping on. We have to remember the little girl and William Gobitis who had the courage. Robert Jackson essentially said to those little kids, "You obey your parents." What's American to us? It shouldn't have taken the High Court to make this case, but they did. The system worked. The framers were right. The framers were right. You worship who you want to worship. And don't do an eight-year-old Phil Donahue who wants to throw stones at Jehovah's Witnesses because they were weird. I had no idea what was going on in that building. But I knew they were weird. So let's understand how we are all influenced. I feel I'm very good at telling people what they already know. And I know that you know these things. But let's understand that we have to prevent ourselves from staring at our shoes, getting depressed, and decide we're going to do nothing. We have a right to be happy. The young men and women who died to protect this Constitution and this nation, the memory of those people now dead is not honored if we fold up, if we collapse. So our job is to not stare at our shoes. Once again, understand that we have millions of Americans today who agree with us. Our problem is to get them to stand up and say so. That's the biggest challenge we have, climbing the wall of apathy so that we can get on the road to peace. I believe it can happen. I believe it can happen with, here we are. It's as great to be surrounded by people who agree with me. I feel like I'm in Disney World. This is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. This grand assembly of people of conscience is the direct result of an attorney I know personally by the name of Ed Garvey, who who reminds me of all my younger relatives, is the son my mother wanted to have, and who is responsible for me having the joy of this experience twice now. And the more I'm here, the more I am impressed. So, let's remember all those young men and women who came home in a pine box with a flag, the ones that the press wasn't allowed to take pictures of, in the land of free speech, free press. Let's, in their memory, enjoy the life that somehow, for whatever fateful reason, we continue to enjoy. Let's sing and dance. Let's show the world that those who protest are as American as they are, and those who protest are not going to sink into depression and sour faces, and we're not going to stare at our shoes. We're going to go to Badger games, Packer games. We're going to have tailgate parties, and we're going to think about all those people who will never get that opportunity again. And we're going to be grateful for this. And we're going to work, we're going to reach out, we're going to see ourselves in another person's face. And we are going to know that we're not alone. And we're going to have larger and larger people marching with us, singing with us, walking in the park and holding hands with somebody they love, because those other young men and women will never have that opportunity. And walking in the park is something that people in this unusually beautiful city have more than one opportunity to do. So I'm looking for you in the park. And I'm hoping that someday we may, who knows, I may be able to dance with some of the women. Not close, of course, but this is the kind of personality that we want our political movement to include. We want to be grateful, we want to laugh, and we will dedicate ourselves to never forgetting what these young men and women did for us. And we're going to make sure that more and more people who agree with us get out there and say so. I'm honored to be in your company, and I thank you very much.